Hello and welcome to South Asia Chart, brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm your host, Dr. Chulani Attanayaka, Visiting Research Fellow at ISAS. President Gotabaya Rajapaksa's Sri Lanka Podujana Party won the recent parliamentary election with an overwhelming majority. With this new victory, where is country's foreign policy heading? To find out, we are talking to Admiral Jayanath Kulumbage, Foreign Secretary of Sri Lanka. Welcome back, Professor.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
So tell us what this election means for Sri Lanka's foreign policy. Will there be significant changes? Are we expecting a departure from the past policies?
Well, to begin with, the electoral mandate the present or the current government received the 5th of this month is unprecedented. Why I say unprecedented is never in the history, through the proportional system of voting, a country's political party has won a two-third majority. Never. And I think the architects of the 1972 constitution or the 1977 constitution, when it was created, the objective was at that time for UNP to be in power forever.
Yeah.
That was the objective at that time, so that nobody will get a majority. This system is a complete mess. But still, through that, the people spoke. The people spoke for change. That's number one. This voting was not just green or blue or red or maroon kind of vote. It was the intellectual vote by the people. And that is why you see the two-third majority. You see, when President Rajapaksa came to power in 2019, November, right, it was basically he piggyback on the popularity of Mahinda Rajapaksa. Obviously, he's still one of the most popular figures in the country, and the success of the SLPP, and more to do with the failure of the Yahapalana government. It was a success story for him. But in this month's election, it is actually president's policies, how the president handled the country, how the president handled the economy, but most importantly, how the president handled the COVID-19 situation. Now, that actually played a huge role in the electoral victory. Now, this goes to say that people expect change, but not many people are very concerned or very concerned about the foreign policy of Sri Lanka. What they need are the basic things. They need economic development. They need improvement to housing. They need improvement to infrastructure. They need better healthcare system. They need no corruption in the society. They want a efficient government machinery. These are the things people want. But then, of course, you know, nowadays in this global village, the foreign relations are very important. And if you analyze the Sri Lanka's foreign policy, like since independence, we have, you know, at times we were a non-aligned country most of the time. But while we were on the non-alignment category, then on some regimes we tilt towards pro-West. I mean, we have a pro-West approach. Then after some time, we have a pro-China approach, right? So although we were, for namesake or ideological sake, non-aligned, but our foreign policy has taken different shift from different time based on the needs, I guess, based on the situation. But by and large, yes, we have remained a non-aligned country. But this non-alignment is also a big doubt right now. Even the foreign minister of India, Mr. Jaishankar, recently said non-alignment is not really applicable to nowadays India. They have to look differently, because the so-called non-alignment, where we had very clearly demarcated or identified two blocks, it's no longer, right? What we have now is one major or superpower and then rising powers. So the superpower is America. Then the rising powers are like China, India, Australia, Japan was a middle power anyway. So this is the situation we have. Now, the answer to your question, although I explain in a very circuitous way, Ria, I don't think we will expect a huge change in our foreign relations. Because if you take the regions, right, West is important to us because the West is where our major exports are going. Our spices, our tea, our garment industry is going to West. So we need to increase trade because economic revival is one of the top pillars of the President Rajapaksa's and the new government. You see, national security, economic relations, and the foreign relations are the three main pillars of President Gotabe Rajapaksa and now of the government. Now, the situation is we need everyone. We need the West. We need Middle East. We need Africa. We need Central Asia. We need India. We need China, Japan, South Korea, Australia. We need ASEAN, right? So how do we maintain this so-called non-aligned foreign policy and still try to be friends with everyone? So this is a huge challenge. So that is why we don't use the word non-aligned. We say our foreign policy will be a neutral foreign policy, but maintaining friendly relations with every country. So this is the cornerstone of our foreign policy, neutrality. And of course, there are a few I can expand a little more, the neutrality and maintaining foreign friendly foreign relations with all the countries. And then I need to qualify that a little further. That is not to be caught up in the major power game which is taking place in the Indian Ocean. That's another side story of our foreign policy, not to be caught, because Sri Lanka is unfortunately a country, practically every day we see the strategic competition by the major players. So unfortunately for many countries, we are the football field, the soccer field that they can come and play the match. But we don't want to be the soccer field. Right? Either we should be in one of the teams, or we should be the referee, or we should be at least the line referee, not the playground, right? So how do we do that? We are a small country, small population, but we have to leverage this strategic attention that the Sri Lanka is having because of the geographical, geostrategic location. In that sense, I think we are important to everyone. So we have to maintain balanced relationship. We have to maintain friendly relationship. We have to remain neutral. We should not be caught up in the power game. So this is kind of the foreign policy that we are working on it. And when you really analyze it, well, it's not a huge quantum jump. You know, certain things that we have done right, certain things we have not done right. So we have to make course corrections and find where we want to be. Bottom line is, whatever decision we take, whatever action we take should benefit the people of Sri Lanka. When you look back our foreign policy, certain foreign policy decisions, certain foreign policy stances have helped us, and certainly some have not helped us.
I really like your reference to football, Professor. But I think the geopolitics and the power game between India and China is not something we can completely ignore and not. I want to sort of like dig deeper into it. In a recent interview, you stated that President Gotabaya's government would be adopting an India first policy in terms of security, but would prioritize economic matters when it comes to China and other countries. So can you elaborate a little bit on this and also tell us, like, given how China's significant foray into Sri Lanka's defense sector, how feasible is this?
Well, we are the pretty girl sitting at the southern tip of the Indian Ocean. We are so attracted to all the major boys around the present in the Indian Ocean, right? Now you see, the President Rajapaksa, even before he was elected, you know, at that time, I'm talking about 2019 November, leading up to that time, there were a lot of misconceptions about Rajapaksas, you know, especially in India, and also in America and the West, right? So there was this argument, Rajapaksas may come to power and they will tilt towards China. So a lot of damage control, a lot of perception change had to be done to allay fears within the Indian hierarchy that Sri Lanka is not going to be that. And so far we have proven that, right? So that is why when our president, his first official visit was to India, and there another prime minister has gone to India, and then president gave an interview to Hindu newspaper, right? And then in the Ruwan Valley Saya inaugural speech, he has always spoken about, you know, India. I don't want to use the word India first again, because that could really lead into a different perception as well. What we mean, what the president mean is, that as far as strategic security concerns are concerned, we have to consider India before we consider anyone else, right? We have to consider, before we consider anyone else, we have to consider India's strategic perception, and we have to consider India's strategic concern. Now, Sri Lanka cannot be, should not be a strategic security concern for India. I mean, you know, Shiv Shankar Menon in his book Choices wrote that Sri Lanka is an aircraft carrier parked 14 nautical miles away. So we don't want to be that aircraft carrier, right? Now that has a huge meaning, right? I asked Dr. Shiv Shankar Menon, sir, what do you mean? He said, no, I wanted to convey a message to the South Dock that Sri Lanka is important. But it has a lot of other meaning, right? So Sri Lanka don't want to be a strategic security concern to India. That's the point number one. Now, can India be our sole economic provider? Can India be our sole FDI provider? Does India have capacities and capabilities to look after the entire neighborhood around India? Well, you give me the answer, right? I mean, we know that India is a huge country, 1.34 billion people, 7,500 coastline, fastest developing economy in 2018. But still, India has their own needs to develop, right? According to statistics, about 28% of Indian population lives below the poverty line. So India need to work, I mean, look after their own people. So therefore, they cannot really look after their entire neighborhood, although they have very great policies like neighborhood first policy, right? And of course, the Act East policy, neighborhood policy, and Sagar, security and growth for all in the region. But then, can India look after the entire region in terms of investment, in terms of development? An answer is, I mean, the obvious answer is no. So therefore, we need to look elsewhere. You see, I mean, China had been a friend from 1950s with the Rubberized Pact, and we got the BMICH, a lot of history behind that. And also even going back to the ancient Silk Route, we were a part. So what is interested to Sri Lanka is not to make a fight between India and China, not to come into a competition, into the competition between these two powers. We have to work with both. Now, if we can convince that India, we are not going to our territory, our territorial waters, or our explosive economic zone are not going to be a threat to Indian national strategic security, then India doesn't mind, in my opinion, that we deal with anyone and develop our country. Because one thing we have to realize is this is a country ravaged by 30 years of brutal war. Now that 30 years actually retarded Sri Lanka while the rest of the world were moving ahead, right? And we didn't have a single highway when we came to 2009. A journey from airport to Colombo took 1.5 hours. Today is 15 minutes, right? So that's the change. So our development needs far exceeded what India could do. Because of course, India was one country which came to support Sri Lanka even post-war. You know, they built 50,000 houses. They laid the railway track to north. They cleared the Kankasanture harbor. They cleared millions of anti-personnel mines. They did a great job, right? They are still continuing building houses. Now, I think this has come to about 60,000 plus. Now, they are building 10,000 for the state sector as well. But still, our development needs far exceeded that, right? So that is why we had to invite everybody. But the West, as usual, oh, you have violated human rights. We are not coming to support you. We are going to take you to task. But China was willing to come and invest. Now, right now, our major projects, most of the major projects are Chinese and Japanese, right? So we have to work with everyone. Now, some of the projects now take, for example, the Port City project, right? Now, that was started in 2014, right? The first phase is completed, reclamation. Now the infrastructure is developing. Now, should we say, oh my God, now we are not going to deal with China? No, we can't say that. We have to finish this project, Hambantota. Now, we have given it on a long-term lease for China Merchant Port Holding. Can we say, oh, no, 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 we can't work Hambantota? Hambantota is the most strategic harbor in the Indian Ocean. It has huge potential to be the hub in the Indian Ocean. It has huge potential to be a competition to Port of Colombo, which is actually 22nd best container port in the world as of now. It has huge potential. So we have to make things work. Now, who can make things work? It is right now. Is China. Of course, Japan is doing great things in Sri Lanka. Many other countries are supporting. But, you know, our needs are much, much more. So how do we balance these two? If we are not a strategic security concern to India, if we can give that assurance to India, India will allow us to develop ourselves. But if we become a strategic concern to India, they will not be very happy when we deal with anyone else. So India has to understand our requirements, and we have to respect. We have to understand India's strategic security needs. And at the same time, we have to understand the business needs or the economic needs of the people. Bottom line, as I mentioned in the beginning, 22 million population of Sri Lanka. How are they going to benefit from all this competition or all this balancing act? How are the lives of these 22 million people going to be elevated by benefiting through this system? Very difficult task, but so far, 9 months, I think we have managed it very well. So we hope we can continue our path.
Professor, I think what you explained looks like a slight change in policy towards China, at least in the eyes of the international community. You briefly mentioned what Sri Lanka is planning to do with China, but can you a little bit explain more what would constitute Sri Lanka's policy towards China?
Well, I would say Sri Lanka, of course, Sri Lanka considers China as a benign player, right? We don't have great suspicions, or we don't buy these conspiracy theories about China. We have to remember China played a crucial role in ending the war. Of course, India again did a great job. Even America supported us and many other countries. But China was the country which actually gave us the weapons to fight, right? When many countries said, they even enforced lethal arms embargoes, China gave us the weapons to fight. So we fought it with those weapons, and we won the war, right? And since then, China has come in a big way. Now, it's not only Sri Lanka, because China has been really extending development assistance, investment in many parts of the world, right? So as far as China is concerned, I think Sri Lanka is critical. Sri Lanka is important because Sri Lanka is in the center of the Indian Ocean. And if you take the distance from, say, Shanghai to Rotterdam, Sri Lanka is almost half. You take the distance from Singapore to Dubai, Sri Lanka is in the half. And the busiest sea lane across the Indian Ocean goes just 12 nautical miles south of Sri Lanka. So Sri Lanka is in a strategically very advantageous location. I'm not talking about military strategically, but trade-wise, right? Or the maritime commerce-wise, Sri Lanka is very important. So therefore, China, through the Belt and Road Initiative, consider Sri Lanka as an important hub, important location. Now, let me look at from the other side. Now, Sri Lanka is in this location, But have we really benefited immensely to uplift the lives of our people by utilizing this geographically advantageous location is a question, right? If you really ask me, when was the last time the strategic location of Sri Lanka was effectively used, I would say during the British time, right? That's way back, going all the way up to about 1948, but then they continued till 1956, right? That's the last time the strategic location of Sri Lanka was cleverly used or manipulated, whatever we like to say. So right now, we have an ambition to be the maritime hub for the region. I'm not talking about the entire Indian Ocean region, but we need to be the maritime hub at least for South Asia. Now, unfortunately, I don't know whether you will agree with me or not, Indian Ocean does not have a single maritime hub. Indian Ocean does not have a single financial hub. We have Singapore, but Singapore is in Malacca Strait. We have Dubai. Dubai is in Persian Gulf. I mean, yes, they are marginal seas of the Indian Ocean. But if you look at the Indian Ocean geography, no. Right? So Sri Lanka aspire to be that. And we have everything going. The deep water harbors. We have 3 deep water harbors on the west, east, and the south. Right? Many other countries don't have that. We have 3 deep water harbors. And we are so close to the busiest shipping line or the shipping lane or the seaborne commerce in the world right now. Right? So we need to capitalize. Now, one of the major problems that Sri Lanka is having is lack of quality maritime related infrastructure. I repeat that, lack of quality maritime related infrastructure. Now we need to build that. We need to build ports, port cities, breakwaters. Now, who can do that? Who will come to do that? It's a question. Now, we look at China mainly as an economic partner, development partner, right? Not as a military partner. Of course, China is there big time in the Indian Ocean. That is not our major concern. What we are concerned is how we can benefit from China's economic growth, China's capabilities and capacities to develop Sri Lanka. We do benefit from India, we do benefit from Europe, but then again, I re-emphasize, our development needs are much greater than any single country can provide. And we would really wish if we can have multiple foreign direct investment. Give us a choice. Give us more investment. If we don't get more investment, we have no choice but to go in one direction. So create choices for us.
Thank you for that explanation, Professor. So from what I understood is that Sri Lankan government is looking at an Asian-centric foreign policy to a great extent. So before we wrap up, let me ask one last question. Sri Lanka has officially withdrawn from the UNHRC resolution and there are complications with the MCC and SOFA agreements with the United States. Amid this backdrop, what are the challenges Sri Lanka would face about its relations with the West? And what will Sri Lanka's approach be?
No, the West is important. West is still, even in the 21st century, the West is the global North, that is the developed area, more economic power. But we do see a shift in that economic power towards Asia right now, towards East. We do see it in front of our own eyes. So the world economy is not going to be same as 10 years before. And we really don't know how post-COVID world economy will behave. And what we want to know is, I mean, what we are thinking is the West is important to us because our trade goes there, our people goes there, the tourists come from the West to us. West is important, right? But at the same time, what has West done to Sri Lanka? That's the question we keep asking. What have they done to uplift the lives of people? Now, India, I explained, built 60,000 houses. That is 60,000 families. Right? So what has West really done? Now, of course, you know, it's not a secret that the previous government had a little bit Western-oriented policy, right? I mean, the previous Yahapalne government, they had a neoliberal policies and they were very little oriented towards West. But how did they benefit? Or how did the country benefit? Now, again, there was even a resolution against us starting from 2009. And very greatly, we went and co-sponsored that in 2015. I used the greatly in a sarcastic way, or not in the best way, right? I mean, that is basically by trying to toe the line of the West, we have not really benefited. On the contrary, you know, they always throw the human rights. Now, I will argue, Chulani, we have not carried out any genocide, no mass murder, no rape as a weapon of war, nothing, right? We fought with the most brutal terrorist organization in the world. Even in 2008, the FBI declared that, right? So that is the organization we fought with. And they are the only terrorist organization to date which had an army, navy, and a standing army, mini navy, and a micro air force. No other terrorist organization. And they are the terrorist organization in the world so far had the widest coverage in terrorist financing and money laundering and gun running and human smuggling and narcotic smuggling. It was that. So we had to battle with that. Now, if you very quickly calculate, until 2009, May 19, per month, Sri Lanka was losing 250 lives. Tamil, Sinhala, Muslim, everybody, 250 lives per month until 2009, May 19. Thereafter, it's zero. So let me ask the question, where is human rights? We have protected the lives of Sri Lankans, of all communities, all ethnicities. So I think that is the best thing. So, I mean, even to date, right, this Damocles sword is hanging on our head. The West is, you know, throwing the human rights. I mean, look at the West. How well they protect the human rights? We do see that on TV every day, right? There are protests, there are firing, there are killing, there are looting, there are ransom. It's like a jungle, right? So we have to understand, if we have a Western-oriented policy, how can we benefit, right? And the answer is we have benefited very little from it, right? Because they always try to, you know, treat us like a small kid. Right, you have done this, therefore you should be punished. You have to give this answer to me, that answer to me. But India is not asking these questions from us. China is not asking these questions from us. Japan is not asking, right? South Korea is not asking. ASEAN countries are not asking these questions from Sri Lanka. They are trying to help us, right? But West keep on bullying us, keep on trying to, you know, push us down. Right? But we don't want to move away from the West. We want everyone. West is very important. But finally, we have to decide with whom we like everybody. We want to be friends with everybody. But our interactive level can differ. From time to time, it changes. And right now, I would very bluntly say, it's India, Japan, China. Right? Right now, as of now, it's India, Japan, China, three countries. We are dealing the majority of our things. Of course, everyone is there, right? Even in the neighborhood, Pakistan, everyone is with us. But if I mention three countries, which we have a lot of dealing, it's three countries, India, China, and Japan. Now, we are not gone China way. We have not gone India way. We have not gone Japan way. These three countries are really involved in Sri Lanka. So we need more friends like this. We need Singapore to play even a major role in bringing foreign direct investment to Sri Lanka. Not in competition. I mean, we don't have a competition, but we need help because Singapore is a small country and a developed country, the only developed country in this part of the world. And so we need that expertise to come to us. We need that assistance to come to us. We need Singapore to bring foreign direct investment. We'll be very happy. Even on the port city, we'll be very happy if we have multiple investment, not necessarily coming from one direction. If there are multiple investment, then the control is there, right? The accountability is divided. That's what we want, Chulani.
Thank you very much, Professor, for a very interesting discussion today. And thank you for finding time for us.
Thank you. Thank you for giving the opportunity.
On that note, thank you for listening to us. Please visit our website www.isas.nus.edu.sg to know more about our work. Thank you.